Well, good evening and welcome to the Commonwealth Club of California. And thank you for choosing the event that is not picketed tonight. My name is Sylvia Rivera and I'm one of the program coordinator for tonight's program, the Elements of Classic Feng Shui with Master Wai-Ming Sun. I would like first to encourage non-members of the Commonwealth Club to become a member by visiting commonwealthclub.org. And before I introduce tonight's speaker, maybe tell you about a few upcoming programs from the Asia-Pacific Forum. On March 22nd, we will have Christopher Toomey, who will speak about China's military. He is an associate professor at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, and he will address the rise of China, which poses many challenges to the U.S., both economical and political, but according to him, the most important and dangerous might be security conflicts. On March 27, John Coons, author of China Fortunes, chairman and CEO of China Hydroelectric Corporation, a company he took public on the New York Stock Exchange, will tell us about his experience as the first American to acquire commercial hydroelectric generating equipment. And there's no date for this event yet, but we are hoping to host Keiko Fukuda, who is the highest ranking female judo master, and she's still practicing and teaching here in San Francisco. So we are trying to get a date in May, so please stay tuned. So I will be introducing our speaker tonight by talking about lineage, the transmission of knowledge from master to disciple through generations as one of the bases of Chinese culture. It is a treasure you receive that comes with great responsibility. And Master Sun here is the recipient of such a tradition, having been the disciple of a master from Taiwan, who is the fourth ranking master of the Blue Dragon lineage. I love that name. A union of masters that practice feng shui for Asian corporations. Although born in New Orleans, in Louisiana, Master Sun began learning Taoist arts from his father, a native Chinese, at the age of 7. And tonight, it is a great privilege to be introduced to this traditional science, its fascinating history and applications. Please welcome Master Wai-Ming Sun.
Good evening. My name is Wai-Ming, like the state Wyoming without the O. My last name is Sun, S-U-N. It's the same word as Dr. Sun Yat-sen, same family name. I'm probably the only Irishman you will ever meet with a Chinese name. My mother's people were from the Irish Channel of New Orleans. When the French people settled the French Quarter, they didn't let people from other countries buy houses there, so they had to go down the river and build, and they formed different communities. My dad won a scholarship to come to America and get his master's degree just before the bamboo curtain fell, and my mom and dad lived in the same apartment building. They were both movie fans, and it took off from there. So my name is actually a quote from the Confucian Book of Poetry, Wai-Ming. Before there was such a thing as a public opinion poll, the Emperor of China used to collect folk songs to find out what people's concerns were. And Wyming is the refrain to one of those songs. It means remembering people, thinking of people, actually to carry all the people in your heart. And so it's very patriotic. You can tell that my grandfather was a high-level official in the nationalist government. Many nationalists choose a name like that. So what is classical feng shui? How did the people in the ancient world think about it? How did they come up with it? Is it even relevant to our lives in the modern world? And how can we benefit from it? First of all, we have to make sure that we're on the same page. And that will take a few minutes. Because what passes for feng shui in the modern world, forgive me if I offend anyone, was invented in 1986. What passes for feng shui in the modern world was invented in 1986 by a very talented master who was interviewed by a famous magazine writer, published in large magazines. And suddenly he had crowds of people that wanted their homes analyzed, crowds of people that wanted to take classes, but these were New Age people. They didn't imagine they would have to do math. But think about it. We send an architect to school 5 years to learn how to be an architect. And yet, in the modern world, we go to a weekend seminar and we hope to learn how to do classical feng shui. This is a vast topic. And we will scratch the surface of it. But at the very least, I want us to be on the same page. I want us to be talking about the same thing when we're talking about feng shui. When the 1986 people were about to leave, the very accomplished master who was interviewed took Occam's razor and made a thin slice off the top of feng shui and invented a system of hanging good luck charms in different directions. This is depending upon the fact, and it is a fact, that nothing is stronger than your mind. There is nothing stronger than your mind. If you set your mind to something, as long as you're careful in the traffic, you can probably accomplish it eventually. If nothing stops you, you will eventually accomplish whatever you set your mind to. And so if you place a reminder in a certain part of your home that you want to do a certain thing, if you place a wind chime, for example, that to say, I'm going to put this in my relationship corner, I want a better relationship, or I want to put a wind chime in the health corner for better health, if you do that, it's going to remind you of that every time you see it, and it will have some effect. But this is not feng shui. It is not. Forgive me. I know I'm going to offend everybody here. I hope you still like me after I say all this. This is not feng shui, because that is using your energy to lift the house. I want to use the energy of the house to lift you. So that means that we have to deal with the physical properties of the house, the physical properties of your body, and the physical properties of the land that it's standing on. In fact, we had to study physics before we started our field trips. We had to study physics. Feng shui is an application of physics that went in a different direction. I mean, thank God we have electric lights and we have air conditioning and heating and all these wonderful conveniences. But we did not think of physics in terms of how to protect the people in a particular place, how to enable them to work there, to sleep there, to cook their food there, to conduct their relationships there, and keep them safe from events in the land like earthquakes, keep them safe from storms, keep them safe from things that would happen that would make them sick. But the ancient people thought in that direction. It's kind of ironic. A lot of modern science, not all of it, but some modern science scoffs at the ancient science But the ancient practitioners, the practitioners of the ancient science do not scoff at modern science. They are studying it intently to find out, did they discover anything useful? Did they discover anything we can use to benefit these people? Did they discover anything we can use to protect somebody on this kind of land? And so what I am doing is not a way of using your mind to lift the house. Now, I believe in the power of your mind, and I believe in practicing your religion and your positive thinking and all these wonderful things to push the spiritual frontier forward, but not to raise the energy of your house. We have ways to do that. So you set it up and you forget about it, and it still works. So what is classical feng shui? Well, there are several ways to talk about this. I don't know if I dare to take that off the stand. it might squeak. But there are several ways to talk about what feng shui is. One way to talk about it, well, it doesn't really move very much. One way to talk about it is as one of the eight healing disciplines that came down from the ancient Taoists. You didn't think about feng shui as a healing discipline, did you? But actually, in my practice, how much? More than 40% of my practice is to help doctors so that their medicine works faster because the blood circulates better. I don't know all these medicines doctors give people, but I do know something about blood circulation and how magnetism affects it, how the directions of the house affect it, how the directions of the bed affect it. In fact, there is a cancer hospital in Vancouver, British Columbia, where I worked several times. And the first time I did a consultation for them, 6 months later, the manager of the hospital emailed me that the average patient stay shortened by 22%. Same doctors, same medicines. But if the blood circulates better, the medicine works better. So one way of thinking about feng shui is as one of the eight healing disciplines that came down from the ancient Taoists. There were eight. And you know a lot of them already. The first one is called Da Zuo. We practice it in the modern world as meditation. Da Zuo means to sit quietly, and we watch fresh and stale energy moving through our minds so that we gain some idea of where we're letting the mind operate well and where we're wasting our energy. The first one, the path of fresh and stale energy through the human brain. Let's see. The second one is breath exercise like Qigong, Tai Chi Chuan, some of the soft martial arts. You could include yoga. The path of fresh and stale energy through human movement. Because if you move in certain ways, it teaches the muscles of the body to contract in an order that maximizes circulation. And this helps people to get well faster. The third one is tonic herbs, because the ancients studied the path of energy through plants that people eat. And there's certain herbs that send energy to particular organs. I mean, we think in very broad generalizations in the modern world. We think in such sweeping terms. Oh, you eat this, well, it goes everywhere. Well, a little bit more of it goes to certain organs. So the third one is tonic herbs, the path of energy, the path of fresh and stale energy through plants that we eat. And the fourth one is feng shui, the path of fresh and stale energy through places where people spend significant amounts of time. You know, I love San Francisco. I've been here many, many times. And everything in San Francisco was more interesting to me than the decommissioned prison, than Alcatraz. But I had some friends that wanted to take that tour. And so I took the tour and I saw the inside of the prison, and then I attended the extra lecture, which told about what happened to the famous prisoners on that island. They were all okay when they got there, and they were all sick or dead when they left. All the ones that they mentioned in the lecture. And the Native Americans who seized the island. Big, strong bodybuilders. You're not using this anymore. You took our land. We want to use it since you're not going to use this anymore. So they lived there 3 months, and at the end of that period of time, they were quarreling among themselves, and their morale was down, and they were starting, some of them, to get sick. So I thought, I think we have a pattern here. And I looked, and I saw the little strait that passes under the Golden Gate Bridge, and I thought, oh yeah. Why? Because that strait is like a funnel, and it accelerates the wind that comes in under the Golden Gate Bridge. And so it hits directly on that island. That wind is going fast because it isn't just the cold air coming in off the ocean. It's the cold air being forced in through a narrow aperture. I'm sure you've seen an hourglass turned upside down. The sand at the top is barely moving, but the sand at the bottleneck is just shooting through. And the wind coming under the Golden Gate Bridge is shooting through onto that island. It's blasting it. So it is impossible to control the climate in those buildings. It would be very, very expensive to keep the temperature steady, to make the wind less harsh. And so in the ancient classics, this kind of island was called a protector island. It's to protect the people on the East Bay because it forces the wind to slow down and to turn so that it is no longer as dangerous. So this island that Alcatraz is built on is a place where you can bring a picnic basket, you can throw around a frisbee, but you don't try to live there. And so even though the people who built that prison didn't know anything about feng shui, the experiences of the prisoners bears out some of the ancient principles. The path of fresh and stale energy, the path of gentle and harsh energy through places where we spend significant amounts of time. The fifth healing discipline is acupuncture. And classical feng shui was discovered maybe half of it, similarly to the way that acupuncture was discovered. Now, you realize, of course, that there are two sets of observations that acupuncture came from. The first is from pain referral. You have a place that's sore, you rub it, someplace else is sore. So you rub this other place and the first place gets better. The second set of observations was from war. I realize that's not a very, politically correct thing to say. But if a Chinese gentleman were shot with an arrow in a war and it didn't kill him, he would go home and say, you know, my problem with my stomach is better. You know, let me see. This is about 1 3/8 of an inch from from my elbow. And he would note where that point was. And over the centuries, they accumulated about 300 points. Well, classical feng shui developed from journals that were kept in ancient China, observing unusual houses on unusual pieces of land and what it did to people of different body types. There are three things missing from all the books in English. Three things. I think I can make that statement. I haven't read all the books in English, but I've seen quite a few of them. I think it's fair to say this. Number one, they have no complete system for analyzing the surroundings. And if you don't analyze the surroundings, you aren't even doing it. The surroundings determine the quality of energy that is coming into your windows and doors. So the first and the most important part of feng shui is to analyze the surroundings. No systematic way of doing that. No complete kit of tools for doing that in any book in English. Number two, They don't have a way of analyzing the body type of the people using the space. People of different body types need different things from their space. To choose an obvious example, if you take somebody who's cold-natured and put them in a house that's good for somebody who's warm-natured, you'll make them sick. You can't say that everybody belongs in the same house. You can't say that all houses are equal. Not even all houses out of a cookie cutter are equal. Even in these neighborhoods where they build every house with the same floor plan, they're all different. They're different distances from landforms, from hills and electronic substations and streets and bodies of water and trees. They're different distances. Every one of those houses has a different quality of air, a different quality of light, and a different quality of energy going into different windows and doors. They're all different. So the fifth discipline from the Taoist masters was acupuncture. The sixth one is moxibustion, which is burning herbs close to the acupuncture point instead of piercing it. That's the path of healing energy through fire, fresh and stale energy through fire. The seventh healing discipline is tuena. It's energy massage. It's massaging the meridians to encourage the blood to go where the qi is going. The classics say where the qi goes, the blood follows. So that's the path of fresh and stale energy through human touch. And then the eighth one is astrology, but not in the modern sense of personality analysis so much as which organ is stronger, which organ needs a little bit of support. When you were born, the first breath that you inhaled contained some of all five elements, but it contained a little bit more of whichever element was predominant that day. And so, the first time your heart beat, it sent an extra share of the blood supply to the organ that was most energized by that first breath. The heart uses fire energy. The lungs use metal energy. Forgive me, those of you that already know this. The stomach uses earth energy. The kidneys use water energy. So whichever energy was predominant that day determines which organ receives the most of that first pulse. And that organ becomes the keystone of your immune system. So we need to know that. We need to know the body type of the people using the space. People will make the same house feel different. Two very nice families living in the same house at different times make the house feel different when it goes in there. You know that from your own experience. Or two very bad families. When you go there and a different family is living in the same house, it feels different when you walk in there. Am I making this up? See, real feng shui is not it is not a system of decoration. I am not a decorator. I make work for decorators. I am an energy analyst. And if I were going to summarize what feng shui is, and you probably haven't heard it summarized this way because, well, my mother was an American. I grew up in America. I'm fairly fluent in English. I would say feng shui is a study of filters. F-I-L-T-E-R-S, filters. And I would say that every object in the physical world, the floor, the ceiling, the glass, the trees outside, the neighboring buildings, the cars in the street, the clothing we wear, our bodies, every object in the physical world is a filter for the fresh and the stale energy in nature. And just like you can change the filtration of your coffee pot to get the kind of coffee you want, you can change the filtration of your home, your office, your shop, to get the kind of energy that your body can absorb for the kind of work that you're doing that year. So to me, classical feng shui is a study of filters. You set it up and you forget about it. It's filtering the energy all the time. You adjust it, you get the energy in the right shape. You don't have to spend your attention and your time and your memory trying to reinforce something which is basically not strong enough to sustain itself. You set the house up the way it filters energy best for you, and you just absorb it. Sleeping in a bedroom where the feng shui has been adjusted to your body type is like putting a battery in a charger. How many of you have awakened in the morning feeling like you were a little bit tired and you really needed another hour or two of sleep and, oh, my back is hurting and I wish I didn't have to get up and I have too many things to do this day? How many of you, should I ask for a show of hands? Yes. On the other hand, how many of you have awakened refreshed and felt as if you had had a massage? Some spiritual being came and gave you a massage while you were asleep that night, and you're soft and cool and ready to start the day, and your breath is easy and the sky is high. And well, if we decrease the number of days where you feel tired and we increase the number of days where you have that fresh feeling upon awakening, isn't that going to help you? So sleep is a vital consideration in the feng shui of a home. If we can get your blood to circulate better, if we can get the North Pole to pull your red cells in the place where you need them to go the most, you will wake up feeling like you've been in a charger, like you were a battery in a charger. You know, the word feng shui, the term, I should say, it's actually two words, comes from a book that was written in the 4th century. I'm going to tell you something that most people don't know and is not in any of the books in English. I mean, why do we call it this name? There was a book written by a great master in the 4th century which stated the classical principle, qi rides on the wind and stops at the edge of water. Qi, the energy in nature, rides on the wind and stops at the edge of water. So that gives us one principle for knowing how to usher it in and how to corral it so it doesn't blow out the other side. But like everything else, it is a two-edged sword. Feng shui is like anything else in life. It's a series of trade-offs. People say, oh, I want a house with perfect feng shui. Okay, what are you trying to do this year? Tell me about how your health has been. You know, what have you been taking medicine for? So it's customized to the kind of work you're doing that year. Well, I want it all. Well, you can have anything you want sequentially, but you can't get the house to give you everything you want at the same time. It is a series of trade-offs, and my job is to help you make trade-offs that move you away from where you don't want to be to where you want to be in pursuing your goals, whether they're spiritual goals or goals in the material plane, which are also important. If you achieve your material goals, you'll have the leisure for spiritual practice. So classical feng shui, feng means wind, shui means water. There are some scholars in the modern world who think that feng shui is only 1600 years old, because we can't really find references to that name in any of the literature. But it exists in older literature. It was just called something else. In the Han Dynasty, 220 BC to 202 AD, am I getting those reversed? Is that right? Is that correct? No? The Han Dynasty, 220 BC, it was called Kan Yu, to scrutinize something, to examine it very closely, to look at it analytically. A huge piece of land to see how to build on that land, to see how to protect the people on that land. Before that, in the early Zhou dynasty, it was called Dili. Dili. Now, in modern Chinese, Dili is geography. In ancient Chinese, Dili means geomorphology. That's the academic word, geomorphology, how the earth changes as time passes. When the wind blows sand against a rock and erodes it, that's Dili. When a river silts up its bed and jumps to the next riverbed, that's Dili. If somebody cornered me at a university and asked me how old feng shui was, I would say, well, it's actually a lot older than this, but we can prove 1800 years BC by archaeology. By archaeology. There are tombs that were built in 1800 BC that are similar to tombs that are laid out in the modern world according to feng shui. A little bit different, but not too much different. So, we are the laughingstock of the Asian world of people that really practice classical feng shui. You know why? Because they wouldn't even call it feng shui. They wouldn't. Because the book that the great master wrote in the 4th century, giving it that name, is the burial book. So if you say feng shui, that means you're trying to cite the grave of your grandfather or your grandmother who just passed away. If you're going to do it for living people, it's kan di. It's to read the land or to read the house. And that is what I do when I come to people's houses. I try to read the house. What does this house tell me that it's doing to these people? What does this house tell me about the habits of these people, about what's keeping them in a rut? What can we do to make this rut easier for them to step out of? That's reading the house, reading the land, Dili. And classical feng shui is astonishing in what it can do to help you. One of my most important clients was a very wealthy woman who married a very prosperous attorney, and she was very successful in her own career. They bought lots and lots of land, and they sold this land to developers. And she, being an octogenarian, had very bad rheumatoid arthritis, and she had had 2 knee replacements and 2 hip replacements, and she was thinking about having 2 shoulder replacements. She had the knee and hip replacements before I met her. And she hired me basically to design houses so that she could have people live in these little houses and then not live with her in her big house. And she could call them to come across the driveway and take care of her, and then they could go back to this small house. Some people are very spoiled. And so I designed several of these for her. And then when the cold weather hit the town she was living in, she was crying. And she didn't like taking the medicines that the doctors gave her because they were painkillers. They knocked her out. And at that point, she was desperate enough to try anything. So I said, why don't you let me show you what I can do? Why don't you let me set you up a bedroom? So I had her employees move her bed back in from one of the guest houses where she was staying to her late husband's study. And I had the bed placed in a certain location with the head in a certain direction. And I took a crock pot. The cook was a very good friend of mine. We took a crock pot from the kitchen, and I placed it according to a formula as a heat source in that room. And I said, I want some soup or some stew or some beans in this pot all the time, and I want her to eat a few bites every day. You can change it every other day. She went into that room kicking and screaming and making a terrific fuss. Well, I mean, she was a diva. The next morning, this very spoiled, very bossy lady was very quiet and thoughtful. And she said, you know, after I was in there, about an hour, the pain was about half. Now, I didn't cure her, but the doctors were able to reduce her meds by 40-something percent. Blood circulation. I should tell you my UFO story, since I told you about where feng shui comes from. Since I told you qi rides on the wind and stops at the edge of water. When I was getting ready to move to Orange County, several of my friends introduced me to a very nice lady who was having trouble with her job because she couldn't sleep at night. She had a very hard time sleeping at night, and her teenage boy was having a hard time in school because he didn't get good sleep. So I went to a very nice middle-class neighborhood, brick homes. I thought, what could be wrong with this house? It's in a nice neighborhood, and I always go through the house twice. First of all, I have to see how everything is connected, and I have to look at the surroundings. And then, the second time through, I make recommendations, and they ask questions, I make comments. And I walked out in the backyard, and I looked up, and I looked up, and I looked up. Her neighbor was a ham radio operator, and he had built a 50-foot antenna in a neighborhood of one-story homes. And, of course, it was grandfathered in under the ordinances because he had the second or third house that was built in that neighborhood. So I turned to this woman and I said, have you been having strange dreams? Then it all came out. There's always one sentence that I say and people just suddenly start telling me their whole life's history. She had lived for 18 years in that house. Her first marriage had ended in divorce in that house. And for 18 years, she had spent her money going to psychiatrists because she had vivid, color, three-dimensional experiences at night of being kidnapped by aliens and forced into their spacecraft and lifted high, high above the earth and made to bend and twist and squirm for their experiments. And she also had spent her money joining UFO support groups. My heart went out to her. I said, that isn't you, it's that antenna. You should have seen the look on her face when she realized she wasn't losing her mind. Now, Jiang Dahong, the great feng shui master of the 17th century, said something funny once. He said, if something is high enough to hit the roof of your house, you already know it's... What is that good for? You already know it isn't good. So with that in mind, I said to her, why don't you just let me help you find another house? We can look at six houses. We'll see a good one or a bad one, one bad one, three or four ordinary houses. And of course, she had a list of reasons she didn't want to do that. My ex-husband's paying the mortgage. My job is nearby. My son's school is nearby. Could you please just help me fix this house? And I had not analyzed her birth date, so I didn't know what body type she had. So I went through the house and I recommended positions for the bed, the desk, the computer, the piano, every place where they were going to spend any significant amount of time. And then I carefully measured the angle between her bedroom window and the antenna. And I said, I want you to put a tree or a bush between your bedroom window and that antenna. And I'll see you at our friend's party next week. If we need to add something to this work, we can do it then. So I didn't want to tell her to put water. She rides on the wind and stops at the edge of water. Because even though if she puts water, it would stop the energy from the antenna, I didn't know if her body could take a buildup of the energy coming from the other direction. So I wanted to be careful about that. People always learn two or three things about feng shui. Oh, I know how this works. We live in a do-it-yourself era. You know, everybody wants to read a how-to-do-it book. And I have the greatest respect for Ralph Waldo Emerson and American Ingenuity and all that, but there's some things you need to go to the doctor for, you know? There's some things you really need to be careful about. So I took her birth date and I did the calculation, and her body could take a buildup of energy from the opposite direction of the antenna. So I saw her at our friend's party the next week, and I said, well, how's it going? And she said, well, I'm doing better at my job. I'm getting some sleep. Good. How's your son doing in school? He's doing better in school. He's getting some sleep. Okay, what about the dreams? Because if something's missing, I want to know. I want to finish what we started. And she said, well, I'm still having some dreams. There just aren't as many, and they aren't quite as bad, but I'm still having a few. And I said, I want you to get the biggest fountain or the biggest fish pond that you can afford and put it in a straight line between your bedroom window and that antenna. That night, ladies and gentlemen, the dreams stopped. 18 years of terrifying UFO hallucinations stopped. Welcome to classical feng shui. I didn't tell her to hang a good luck charm to stop that. It was physics. It was an application of what the ancient people knew about what moves energy and what stops energy. There is another chapter to this story. Is this interesting to you? There's another thing I could tell you. See, she wanted to go back to school and study to become a nurse so that she could make more money and have a better life. And she was working at the same time. So she didn't want anything to ever fall into the little fish pond that she bought. So she bought a huge cabana umbrella and put it over the fish pond to keep it clean. That night, the aliens came back. She could have called me, you know, but she thought she could do it herself. That night, the aliens came back, but she did realize that was the only thing she changed. So she got up in her nightgown and she went out and took down that umbrella and put it in her utility closet, and then she was able to sleep. The great master Guopu never saw a ham radio operator's radio antenna, but he gave us the principle that we could use to deal with something like that. And I should tell you another story. I have so many strange coincidences happen to me. Ever since I started practicing at this level, people come to me with unusual things. There was a couple that just got married. It was their second marriage. And they built a new house before they met me, and they wanted me to go through the house and tell them where to put everything before they moved in so they wouldn't have to remove it once they were in. They wouldn't have to reposition their furniture, their bed, their computer, their TV. So I was going through an empty house, and I was telling them, oh, yes, you can put this here, you can put that over there. And then I got to the bedroom where the stepdaughter was going to sleep, the wife's daughter by her first husband. And I said, you can't have your daughter sleep in this room. Why? Because she will have digestive problems. She will have female problems. Sorry, ladies, I have to be a little bit uncouth to tell you this story. And it will give her migraine headaches with all the bells and whistles. The blind spot in one eye, the floating colors, the numbness that goes from one joint to the next until she has a total regurgitation, until the next headache builds up again. But it's very easy. You have a bonus room. Just put her, it's even bigger. The bonus room is bigger. Just put her into the bonus room and then put your storage in here. Oh, but this was going to be her room. You know, the second husband was going to make this girl love him as much as she loved her birth father because he was going to give her this bedroom to be her room. And I said, oh, they also told me she already had migraine headaches. And they described the bedroom she had in the birth father's house, and it had the same thing wrong with it. So I said, it's easy, just move her to the other room. Tell us what to put in that room. We'll do anything. We'll get cork tiles, and we'll nail them all over the walls and the ceiling and the floor. And I said, I can't tell you that because it won't work. And they said, well, tell us what to do so that we can put her in there. And I said, I'm not a witch. So I actually met the daughter later, and I told her why I recommended she be in the other room. And I finished the analysis, and I left, and they paid me. And 2 months later, following up, I called them. And they had, They had put her in that room, that poor little girl in that room, and they had spent money taking her to neurologists, and she had all kinds of tests, and she went through all kinds of medicines and all kinds of migraine headaches. Finally, after 6 weeks, they gave up and did what I suggested, and the headaches stopped. If the room irritates your nervous system, you can do what you want. The irritation is still there. But if you leave that irritation and go to another room, you're going to find yourself feeling better. Same thing happened on the East Coast. There was a family that had been married continuously, and they had three daughters. And I went through their house and got to the middle bedroom, the middle daughter's bedroom, and I said, "This girl is going to have migraine headaches. Why don't you just put your storage in this room and move her into the storage room? It's a better room anyway. It's bigger." "Oh, you don't know my kids. My kids are tough." And I said, "Well, if she stops having the headaches that you've told me she has already begun to have, she will be a lot happier." And so I left. They paid me. I finished the analysis and I left. Called back 2 months later, 6 weeks, they had taken her to neurologists. They had put her through all kinds of tests. She had had the migraine headaches, and finally they gave up and moved her to the other room, and the headaches stopped. One family was on the East Coast, and one family was on the West Coast. How do you figure that? 6 months apart. Same problem, same behavior. Karma. Anyway, I have some cards, some business cards in the back of the room. I am available for private consultation. If you'd like me to consult with you, please see me after. And I'm told to give you some time for questions and answers. Should we do that now?
This is not a handheld, right?
Yes, okay. I should just put it back.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll answer you if I can.
Oh, this works?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, the two examples you gave are interesting, and I wonder if you could just give us some idea of mm-hmm. what you saw in those two rooms that made it so that they couldn't do anything with it.
It was an angle to different electrical elements in the house. Most of the people who practiced with a sense of karma, with a sense of don't harm the neighbors, don't harm the environment, were attached to the imperial court in Beijing. And when the Manchurian dynasty fell in 1911, these people began to consult for Asian corporations. And they began studying the effects of plumbing and electricity in 1900, because that's when people began to include plumbing and electricity in their homes. This is going to affect people's health. What's it going to do to people's health? And which areas of the house will be the most affected based on where they place certain things, based on where they place the fuse box or the hot water heater or the air conditioner or different things like that. And so they studied the angles to these things which are relatively free of influence and the angles which absorb most of the influence. And that bedroom was in one of the angles that was electrified.
So you mentioned that different body types respond differently to different environments.
Yes, ma'am.
And so I'm wondering, what happens if there are multiple people with different body types and possibly like opposing body types in one house? Or say there's a mm-hmm. couple. Does that mean that they're just not made for one another, or that they can't live under the same roof? Or what?
Not at all.
What does that mean?
Not at all. That's one of the beauties of feng shui. It helps people with body types of conflicting elements to work through moments of crisis. If you fall in love with somebody whose element conquers yours, you know what I'm saying by that. I mean, water, fire, water attacks fire. Okay, but suppose a water person falls in love with a fire person. As long as everything's going well, that's fine. It's in moments of conflict that they might have a trouble communicating. They might talk past one another. So if you use the shape of the energy in the house to build a communication bridge for moments of crisis, that gets them through the rough periods. But their whole relationship is not a rough period. They wouldn't have fallen in love to begin with if they didn't have many, many good periods. It's just that every relationship goes up and down, just like the waves in the ocean. The other factor to consider is that bed position, door position, desk position, the position of a musical instrument if you practice a couple of hours every day, all of those are also factors in what feeds energy into your body. So if one family member plays the piano a lot and the others don't, then you can funnel energy towards the bench of the piano. If one member of the family has a different bedroom, you can position the bed for their body type and position the other people's bedrooms for their body types. There are things that can be worked out. The whole house. See, we're always thinking in such sweeping terms. We think if it affects one thing, it affects everything. And that's the effect of our brothers and sisters from the modern sciences. They want to have generalizations with no exceptions. And that's a good way of studying the natural sciences, but we also have to recognize that there are anomalies, and we have to study the anomalies and benefit from those as well. And that's what the ancient people did. They studied the anomalies, the anomalous happenings, and the cause and effect that were operating there. Yes, sir?
How does one become a feng shui master? I mean, you don't go to school. Do you study with a master yourself?
Yes. What is a master first? Yes.
Okay. I mean, if I wanted to become one, what would I need to do?
Okay. First of all, we have to talk about what is a master. There are many people who, out of modesty, will say master just means I started studying before you. And that goes over really well in the modern world, where we've all read Ralph Waldo Emerson and we all want to read a do-it-yourself book. There is a better quote which says that a scholar knows all the rules and a master knows all the exceptions to the rules, which relates to the answer of the previous question. Now, if you studied the fundamentals of feng shui and didn't become a master, it would still help you. If you study it systematically, you are not collecting a bag of formulas. You are collecting systems so that you can take apart the energy of a house like Tinker Toys and you can put it back together again. And you can handle solutions to problems that your teacher never showed you, because you know how to take it all apart and put it back together again. That's really what a master is. So first of all, we have to be clear on that. A master has a systematic knowledge of feng shui, not a collection of formulas like many of the consultants. Oh, I'm going to get myself in trouble saying this. Like many of the consultants in Hong Kong who help competitors practice feng shui war on each other. You know, they have a handful of formulas, but they don't know how to solve the problem if it's outside the formulas they know. And they can only repeat examples that they've already been shown. So they're not masters. They don't have a systematic knowledge. A master can take apart a brand new situation and say, okay, this is coming in here. This is going out there. You know, the stale energy is coming in here, so let's see if we can seal this off. Fresh energy is leaking out there. Let's seal this off. Fresh energy could come in here. Let's open this up. They consider it like a system, you see. So the first thing that you need to do is to open your eyes to the weather and open your eyes to the different body types of your friends and your neighbors, because people are one-third of the feng shui of any building. See, that isn't in any of the books in English. We'll get to you in just a second. That's the first thing you need to do. The second thing you need to do is to practice your religion. You need to practice so that you have good karma. Part of feng shui deals with karma. And a master is going to choose students based on their karma. If we find somebody who is in a very bad house, a house that totally misfits the piece of land that it's on, and it's going to take them a long time to get out of it, we tell them to practice their religion, to pray, to do good deeds, because that will replace most of the energy that a bad house is draining out of them. But if you build your karma up, then some of the saints, some of the angels will move a master to become your teacher. You know what happens when you take a public class and a master is interested in taking apprentices? They take your birth date. And you don't share your birth date with just anybody. Your birth date is a lot of information. They take your birth date to a temple, to a saint, whichever saint they are closest to, and they throw some kind of dice, and they say, is this one of the people I should take as an apprentice? And only those that get three yeses in a row are taken as apprentices, because then it's not a coincidence. Two yeses and a no, we like you, have a wonderful life, but but you will find another teacher, not me. You see, so the next thing I would tell you to do is to work on your karma. And if you pray, and if you do a lot of good deeds, the angels, the saints, the ancestors will make a good teacher cross your path and give you the karma so that you'll get three yeses when they throw the dice. That's the shortest answer I can give you.
Yes, my question is, mm-hmm. If one were to read books on feng shui, how would you tell the difference or the variances between the ancient and the modern feng shui?
The modern feng shui is based on eight directions. Now, there is a system, an ancient system, based on eight directions, but the modern system is you have a good luck corner here. You have wealth here. You have relationships there. You have healthy people here. You have helpful people there. So whatever you want, put something there and build it up. It's very nonspecific. That's why people think feng shui is a superstition, because they just sling anything in that corner, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, depending on if they've meditated, if they got the concentration. Ancient feng shui is based upon the relationship between people and buildings and the land. There really aren't any good books in English, because even the books that are written by Chinese people have mistakes in them. They have serious gaping, even some of the books that are quite beautiful have gaping mistakes in them. What I would recommend is that you practice your religion. You say your prayers, you do good deeds, and then the saints will send somebody that can teach you, and you will get chosen. That's the best I can tell you. I mean, there are a lot of reasons there aren't good books in English. One of the reasons is that you can't write something and divulge industrial techniques, proprietary knowledge, without your teacher's permission. And there are a lot of good reasons for that. You know, I'm an American. I was raised in America, and I had to reverse this inside myself, because we don't want criminals making somebody's employees sick because a client hires them to do that. There are things clients will ask you for that you cannot do for them, but you can do something good for them instead, and just don't let them know about these other things that they've asked you about. You can still benefit them a lot, you know. But you cannot... you cannot use feng shui to hurt people, even if somebody offers you a lot of money to do it. And that's why teachers are very choosy about who they teach, and that's why they're very choosy about what they let their students write about, you see. Sorry to give you such a discouraging answer. Yes, and I told this lady, yes.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, you talked about body types and feng shui.
Yes.
So I would request a little bit more elaboration on that. Different body types, what kind of feng shui might that be?
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am, that's a very good question. First of all, you know about wuxing qi, the five element qi. Those five elements nourish particular organs in the human body. Fire is an energy, and it's actually a shape of energy that nourishes the heart. Metal is not just metal, it's a shape of energy when energy filters through metal that nourishes the lungs. Water is a shape of energy that nourishes the kidneys. Earth is a shape of energy that nourishes the stomach. Wood is a shape of energy that nourishes the liver. And so if you were born on a day when wood energy was the most abundant energy in the atmosphere, then the first time your heart beats, it sends an extra share of that first pulse to your liver. And that becomes the keystone of your immune system. And if we keep that strong, you'll get over anything that happens to you within reason, you know, as long as you aren't run over by a truck. But on the other hand, if the liver should become congested in somebody with a liver with a body type, then a small illness somewhere on the periphery could turn into a long-term project. So we keep this in mind when we're arranging the sleeping space, when we're talking about where food is cooked, when we're talking about where people do their work. I mean, there are spaces that will make people forget things. There are spaces where people remember knowledge that they studied years ago and thought they had forgotten. I'm sure you've seen certain experimental stores that have been built where all the aisles are at 45 degrees. When I go into those stores, I can't remember what I went in to buy. And that's just the most noticeable example. There are many ways that space can hide knowledge from you, or it can stimulate the memory of your knowledge. There are ways that offices can cause employees to bicker with one another or to form into teams and do things together. The space influences people. Sometimes your space can determine whether you tire out in an hour and a half or whether you stay in top form 3, 4, 5 hours, basically until you get hungry. All of this is classical feng shui. It is not magic stardust that can make you get away with doing some horribly unnatural thing. But it enhances everything that you do in your life. And if you're taking care of yourself, if you're taking vitamins, they work better because your blood circulates better. If you're exercising, the exercise is more effective because the air is fresher. You see. Classical feng shui works with your house as a filter, or your office, or your business, to enhance whatever it is you're doing so that you're in top form most of the time, if not all the time. And have I used up my time? Can I talk a little longer?
One more question.
Okay.
What can you tell us about the appropriateness of this room as an example for public, as a public forum?
Well, you kind of put me on the spot because I didn't bring my compass. However, I will say that it's good that everybody can hear me, so the acoustics must be good enough. The blue carpet is very soothing. The high ceiling assures that we have enough oxygen so that we don't breathe it all up before we finish our meeting. I mean, there are many good things about this room. But when we say good or bad, we have to talk about in comparison with something. I haven't seen all of the other rooms in the Commonwealth Club, so I can't say if this is the best room or the second best or the third. Feng shui is a series of trade-offs, just like everything else in life. And my job is to help people to trade the things that are not serving them for things that will serve them.
Thank you very much.